When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
It would be a Wolves fan, eh?
On goes Paul. People might yet win it here for Wolves. Blast in the shot. What a goal!
Evening and welcome to Wolves Fancast, reviewing the, well, we'll get into it, but the disappointing defeat against Aston Villa yesterday in association with Audi and Boston Coffee Company. Tonight, joined by Tom Calvert and Ed. Evening, guys. How are we doing?
Yeah, all right. Thanks, mate. Happy egg.
And you, Ed?
Yeah, not too bad. Full of chocolate, but other than that, I'm all good.
Oh, it's that Easter smile. At least we've got that to look forward to today and sort of drown our sorrows in chocolate, as it were. Getting straight into it. So, yesterday, I mean, we all knew that there was always going to be some kind of interesting team lineup going into the game against Villa. But did we see Chuamo starting, or did we think that Nathan Frazier would get the nod again? What would you reckon, Tom?
I thought Chuamo might start, just because Frazier was so bad against Coventry. I just think it'd have been almost bad news almost to start him again. Again, it's not his fault. I'm not knocking the kid at all, and it's not O'Neill's fault either, but he looked so out of his depth against Coventry. And Chuamo looked like he had a little bit about him when he came on. And Chuamo had a decent week as well, playing for England, scoring in the under-18s. So I had absolutely no complaints with him coming in. And I think it probably was the right call. I mean, you know, we're pretty limited, aren't we, in options. So I think out of the two, toss of a coin, and probably I'd have gone for Chuamo myself anyway.
Yeah, most definitely. I mean, it was tough to make any sort of call. I mean, we are light on numbers. I mean, looking at that starting 11 that we had up there, Ed, is there any sort of area that you'd look to change, or anything we could have done differently? You know, hindsight's a beautiful thing.
I don't know, because if you look at that bench, I mean, it's lighter than anything. And there's what, four kids and a goalkeeper, and then the rest are defensive players. No, not really. I think Chuamo starting over Frazier probably made sense, not just because of everything Tom's just said, but also the spacing behind as well, with the high line that Villa like to play. The one chance we might have had is something going over the top, and Chuamo is quicker than Frazier. No, I don't know what else we could have done. I'm sure we'll talk about Lamina's new hybrid placement on the pitch. Maybe we could have played Aitnori and Bueno and moved Aitnori to left wing, but Gary doesn't seem to like that.
Yeah, it's all about balance at the moment. I think that's the key thing is trying to get the best out of players. You know, we've got Pedro Neto out. We've got Matheus Cunha. Hopefully, we'll be back in the fold soon. And Hwang, who, you know, who's done really well with the goal scoring exploits this season, has been out. The thing is, Tom, is how does Gary O'Neill look forward, and how does he mould this squad to try and get something out of it? And as Ed quite alluded to there, with the role that Lamina's done, do you think that what we're doing is a positive change? Or do you think that the way that we're playing football, although it looks positive, is the right way to go about it at the moment?
I think it's just we're so limited on what you do. Everything we've done good this season has come from really quick counter-attacking football, by and large. It hasn't been tippy-tappy stuff around the box. And as good as Sarabia has been this season, he's very, very slow. Frazier looks slow as well. So we haven't really got the options to sort of play almost as we've been playing successfully this season. I think O'Neill got it pretty right yesterday. I mean, the first half an hour, I was impressed. I was expecting an onslaught, maybe it's a strong word, but I was expecting us to be second best for almost the whole game. And I don't think we were. I think we started really, really well. And actually surprised me. I don't know if it was surprising that Villa weren't as good as maybe what everyone's been, you know, everyone's been saying, particularly the Villa fans, or maybe we were going to be as lackluster as maybe what I thought. But I was pretty impressed with the first half an hour. But in regard to style of play, I've got no complaints with that. I mean, what's the guy to do? We all knew this was going to be a problem. Everyone on anything related to Wolves knew this was going to be a problem as soon as the window slammed shut. Apart from, let's maybe say, Jeff Shee or the people on the board, maybe.
Well, that's definitely another talking point. Yeah. But heading back sort of into the game, sliding doors moments, Ryan Aitnouri. He's been involved in the goals this season again, and you know, his attacking threat is brilliant, Ed. That chance, where, you know, we'll all be ruining it, you know. Talk me through it. Talk me through that chance for Aitnouri.
I was off my seat, selfish reasons as well. He's in my FPL team, and I was screaming points almost instantly. I'm pushing for top three in the league that I'm in at the minute, which is quite competitive. And he snuck in at the back, like you said, Jafo. That's what he's been really good at this year, has been the dribbling and being involved in the play, which is why I kind of talked about, was there an option to him for him to play left wing? And he's in. He's in with literally just the goalkeeper to beat, and he's, what, 8 yards out at most? And it's not a lazy finish, but it's the finish of a left-back, isn't it? That's what it looked like to me, someone who doesn't quite know where he is. And maybe some of his other goals that he scored, I'm thinking Everton on Boxing Day, it's kind of, that's almost a tapping kind of, not a lot you can do about it. Coventry, he was on like a one-man mission to drag us back into that game. That was a little bit of a instinctive finish as well. That one, he had a bit of time to think about it, didn't he? And he Fabio Silvered it.
Do you think that he maybe thought he was offside? Because it was timed perfectly, the run, but just maybe there was something in his head. Because we've got a comment on YouTube here from Still with the maybe he's got to place the whistle. Maybe he thinks he's offside. Is it one of those where we could say, okay, maybe he's had an opportunity to have the shot, and maybe he's fluffed it because, you know, he thinks he's offside potentially. But yeah, as I say, sliding doors moment, and then so we've had all the possession, we've had a good centre of the play, and it feels like a goal out of nowhere from Villa. So we talk me through it, Tom. The goal for Villa, the first one. It's a wonderful strike from Moussa Diaby.
Yeah, it's a great strike. I think watching it back, it is, you know, one of those where you're like, oh, could this person have done better than that? And, you know, I couldn't really put blame anywhere, to be fair. I know it was Doyle, I think, doesn't it? Comes off his shin, but it's coming at such a pace. I think he's, you know, he's just got something on it, which, all, you know, has sort of cleared the danger. We are quite congested within, sort of between the penalty spot and our goal line. But that is how we defend in generally, and by and large, you know, we had a bit of a ropey spell a few weeks ago, but by and large, we defended set pieces pretty well as a unit. So that's, you know, we're sort of trying to shut off the box, which we think is the most threat. So when it comes to someone on the edge, we haven't really got anyone in the vicinity. And then I heard some bullshit about, you know, people having to go at Saar and then Kilman or whatever, but is it... If you slow that down, you think, you know, okay, so, you know, maybe Kilman could have put his head on it, or Saar maybe could have his hands to it. He's absolutely rifled it. It looks worse slowed down, but I can't put blame on anyone there. Anyone, particularly at fault. It's just a good strike, and that's the difference, isn't it? They had a player who could do that, and we definitely didn't, and that was the difference.
And that's the thing is how do we create opportunities and score goals when we can't make chances other than the one for a left back. So Ed, sort of, we'll look back into this Lamina role. So yeah, as you say, he's been playing a little bit further forward. Do you think we're getting the most out of him where he is now, or do you think somebody else could play that role?
I don't know. Someone could play that role on the bench. I don't know. Two of the kids, I genuinely don't know who they are. and Chirewa, is it, that came on? Mm-hmm. He doesn't look like it either yet. They're all so young, it's hard to make any kind of statement about any of them. I know Lamina, I know he's a midfielder, but I don't know much about him either. Not really, no. I just wondered if maybe we could have packed the midfield a little bit more with maybe playing Lamina in central midfield rather than sort of this hybrid left wing, central midfield, attacking midfield kind of position, because he seemed ineffectual the last couple of games in that position. And where he's been dangerous is breaking a bit deeper. He's allowed Joao Gomez to go forward as well. We talked about the Tottenham game when he's able to sit. We had Tommy Doerr there, who for the first half an hour, like Tom said earlier, we were dictating the play. We were really quite impressive, way more impressive than I thought we were going to be. And with him kind of sitting, dictating the play, maybe we could have packed out the midfield a little bit more. But then we would have left Chiwomi really, really isolated up front. So that wouldn't have worked either. I think we're trying to play chess with like checkers pieces, aren't we, at the moment? It seems to be like we're not playing the right game at the moment.
I think that's a good statement as well. We are trying to play this sort of much slower sort of football where there's a lot more possession. I mean, the stats showed it yesterday. I mean, we had more possession. I mean, for a majority of the game, we were up at 60, 70% possession for that first half, Tom. Do you think that we've got the players to sort of play this style of football, or do you think that we are a team that is solely built for counter-attacking?
It's an excellent question. I said, I've banged on this channel for ages about how we've been a counter-attacking team for 6 years, 7 years, probably even in the Nuno Championship days. I still think we were actually best on the counter. And I think players were ultimately bought almost to play that system. I don't think it's a way we can't play. That we look good on the ball. We looked good on the ball yesterday, and I think it was just that final pass. Or obviously we crafted that chance for Aitnori. And I think you could see from O'Neill's reaction after that miss that he knew that was huge. Like that was like a game change. 100% sliding doors, game changing moment. Would have given us something to hold on to, and chances were going to be at a premium with the players we had on the pitch. But I would love to know the stats on win percentage when we've had the most possession compared to when we haven't, because I reckon that we definitely win more games when we have less of the ball than when we do. We struggle to break teams down, don't we, when we've got the ball at our feet, and are much, much better when we spring the counter-attack. That's why we've been better against the bigger teams for years and struggled against the teams at the bottom. But I don't think it's something that's ingrained into us that we can't change. We've got good quality footballers. Not so much in attacking third yesterday, obviously, but we have got good quality players who are very good on the ball. So, you know, we can hopefully be versatile. That's something O'Neill bangs on about, isn't it? About versatility and being able to change horses for courses, different games, different dynamics. So, see what the summer brings.
Most definitely. I mean, looking at the players who were injured, Ed, so we got Pedro Neto, Acuna, Wang, even Craig Dawson, who wasn't involved yesterday. Is there anybody there who you think going into that game yesterday would have made the biggest difference to you? Would it have been Matheus Cunha possibly?
Yeah, Cunha. But I think we are three times a better team with Cunha in that middle, being able to link up the play all by himself, breaks by himself. Pedro Neto, we all know his qualities. He's more than a pace merchant, but of course on the break he's frightening. Huang is a finisher. We've seen him improve as a footballer under Gary O'Neill, but he is still at times a bit of a passenger at times when we have the ball a lot. But Cunha holding the midfield and striker positions, that final third all by himself, is what makes us, I think, unique in the Premier League. We have a forward that does that no one else does, able to not just come deep for the ball, but to drive with it as well and to bring other people into play. And if you look at any team at any level, if you take away their front three, they're going to look bad, which is exactly what we do look like in the final third, because we are missing our three probably informed players at different times this season and arguably our best player overall in Matheus Cunha. We're missing those three. We're on a hide into nothing unless we pull something out of the bag.
Yeah, and it's a good position to be in if you're a youngster at Wolves at the moment. You know, it's a lot like the Raul Jimenez situation when he was out injured for such a long time, and Fabio Silva got a lot of game time. Which of the young players coming through, Tom, do you think has benefited the most from the game time? Do you think Nathan Frazier's took his chance as well as he could have done, or do you think at the moment he's kind of like 50-50 between him, Chuoma, you know, Noah Lamina's still on the outskirts as well. Who do you think could benefit the most from this sort of injury crisis that we've got?
I actually think it's been detrimental to Frazer. Actually, I think he would have been so much better if he'd have been on loan at a lower league side learning his trade. The Premier League is hard league. Yeah. For some kid who's just come in, you know, he's literally gone from under 23 to the Premier League. It's just baptism of fire. We saw it with Fabio, who, you know, okay, yeah, we talk about potential and everything like that, but I mean, he was thrown into it, and again, you know, he allegedly had all this quality, and he couldn't do it. I mean, he can't do it now, but he couldn't do it at the time. It's just you can't just pick a player at the under 23s and then put him in the Premier League. They have to be an unreal talent for that to happen, in my opinion. So I think it's almost had the opposite effect. Like Fraser, there was talk of Fraser going to Shrewsbury, wasn't there, on loan, and that would have been probably quite good. I think much better than him trying to cut the mustard in the Premier League. Chuomi, out of the ones I've seen, Chuomi looks like he's got a bit about him. I think he looks like he'll be quite a player. He seems, you know, quite intelligent in his movement. He's got a bit of pace about him. You know, his touch seems pretty good. So again, I don't think he's the answer long term. Obviously, again, he'll be one that hopefully gets a move down the leagues and implies his trade there before. I hope he makes an impact with ourselves. Lamina, we can't call, can we? Because we haven't seen him. That is it. Chiroa, he doesn't look ready as well. It's great that they're getting the opportunity. I think it is good from the club's point of view, because you're going to have, you know, it looks like we're very much in the youth model, you know, where you're going to have, they've got players that are going to look at it and see that, well, there is a route to the first team at Wolves, which is good. Let's hope the depth problem is solved to a certain extent in the summer. But yeah, hopefully there's a route that they can see to first team Premier League football, which wouldn't be the case at many other clubs in the league.
Yeah, I think it's good to see that there is that sort of route and progression for within the club, and players can come in. It's an unlikely situation that we find ourselves in at the moment, and you know, hopefully we can get ourselves back to being a full strength squad and finish the season off in some sort of form and style. Heading back towards the game, I wanted to avoid talking about the Ezri Konsa goal because it was frustrating, but we have to talk about it, so we'll get to it. Ed, talk me about this goal. Come on, he's not meant this, has he?
No, he doesn't have this in his locker. No, he's completely and utterly scuffed it. John Duran's come on and he looks that bad that he spelt his first name wrong. Like, it's just, even he bundled it in and still looked awful. No, he's not meant it. It's one of those, isn't it, that he stood it up to the back post. Duran probably would have headed it in if it had been an actual good cross, because no one was marking him. It's one of those fluke goals. Sarr's been left stranded. No one's picking up the big bloke at the back. It was probably the one time we really did look kind of lost. I think we were defending pretty well. We were pretty solid with where everyone was. We weren't exactly being pulled apart, unless I'm misremembering. It's a fluke goal that maybe would have been a goal anyway if the ball had just been stood up to the back post. Doyle gave the ball away, yeah, didn't he? I think that's where yeah, the error was for that goal. And then from there, it's a scrambling for places. That's why people get lost in the transition, don't they? Coming back, that's where players get free, and it's a cheeky finish because he didn't.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, certainly. And really, comment on YouTube. For those who are watching on YouTube, you can see Doyle had a bad moment and then no one know where the ball's going. So, I mean, granted, that's correct. I don't like to give anyone on sort of Twitter who puts discourse out there and stuff, but there were comments about Doyle yesterday which were promptly deleted. there always is in sort of Wolves fan base some kind of scapegoat. Is there really a need at the moment for a scapegoat? Where we are, what the club's doing. I mean, we've gone into this season. We've been really essentially everyone can say we've overachieved because of where we were and how the club was left with Lopetegui and Gary O'Neill coming in as this sort of outsider and no one. Is there any need for this sort of discourse, Tom, or is it just we can expect people on X, Twitter, whatever it's called nowadays, just to put things out about players who really isn't deserved?
It's just the world we live in, especially the football world we live in, unfortunately. It's not just Wolves, it's all clubs. You see it all the time. But I mean, what's there to not Doyle about, really? He's done really, really well. Would they rather have Matheus Nunes back, who didn't want to be here, played, you know, a handful, if that, of good games, cost the earth on big wages, threw his toys out the pram because he couldn't get the move he wanted? Or do they want grafters and players like Doyle, who do have ability? I'm not just saying, you know, he's a competition winner. He's just, you know, we've got to, you know, chant his name because he tries hard. He's got quality and we've seen that this season. And yeah, he made a mistake. You know, these things happen. It's not the reason we lost the game. We weren't going to score in that game. We could have been playing till now. We weren't going to score. So, do you know what I mean? It's just one of them. But yeah, unfortunately, it's the cynical world that we live in. You know, they've got to blame someone. Doc wasn't on the pitch for long enough, was he?
Exactly. I mean, there is always one, and it's the way that our fan base has always worked. But looking forward out of this game, we've got Burnley in the weekend. Looking forward to that game. Do you think we can be positive going into it? Can we take positives out of this Villa game? Is there anything that you want us to see, take away and improve from what we did against Villa? Or is there, you know, is it going to be much and much of the same?
We're back to talk about the same thing, and that team is still what it is, isn't it? Yeah. The only thing, I've been banging the drum since Cunha's injury, genuinely want Doc up front. We saw yesterday with his header, the bloke knows where to be in the box, and I've been watching Wolves long enough to be there for scapegoats. We had Simon Osborne in the 90s, then Carl Henry. Now we're having whoever it is that we fancy are making scapegoats now. There's nothing's gained from not supporting the team, and we've seen how well we've overachieved this year. So what can we expect? I'd expect very similar to what we played yesterday. Burnley are crap. That's the only thing we've got going in our favour, and they don't even have company on the bench, do they, with his weird hat? He got sent off, didn't he? So he's not going to be there to...
It's worse, though. It's Bellamy now. It's even worse.
But he can point in his sleeve again when we beat them, so that's fine. Yeah. So we should have enough to at least be more competitive at home. Burnley, they like the ball, don't they? Let them have the ball. We're better without it, like Tom said earlier. Let them have the ball and they'll make a mistake, and let's hope we can pounce on it this time. And maybe Ait Nouri in the Bueno thing that I talked about earlier, maybe we can try Ait Nouri at left wing and just do something slightly different. We need someone around whoever we decide to play up front, whether it's Tuomi or Fraser.
I like the Danny Butterfield feeling for Doherty. If he went up there and scored a hat-trick, no one would complain. But somehow, I just feel like that would only be against Wolves. So, it's just the whole thing. Yeah.
Wasn't he a striker in his youth days or something? I'm sure I've read an article where he used to play up front, because I think that's why he claims that. Because to be fair, Ed's absolutely right. He does pick up great positions in the box. Mm-hmm. And under Nuno, there's one season where he was on average positions on the pitch. He was our furthest forward. Why not? what other options have we got, really? I can't see it, but you never know. Ait Nouri up top. I wouldn't be against that, to be fair. But then again, he the amount of times he picks the ball up from about, I don't know, 40 yards out, you know, sort of inside our half, beats three men and we're up the pitch. Which we'd miss, I think, if he was a little bit higher up. I mean, you know, people talk about Kuna being back. There's no chance he's going to start, surely. Like, if he's not even on the bench for Villa, he's not going to start 3 days later. The absolute best we'll be able to hope from that is like a 10, 15-minute cameo at the end.
Yeah, and there's no point risking him, is there?
Yeah. I mean, you've seen it already. Yeah, hamstrings, it's just not worth it.
This is an advertisement from BetterHelp Therapy Online. We all carry different stresses, big and small. It could be from work, stuff going on at home, or just from supporting a football team. You flatter to deceive, and as the bed sheets have always said, let us down. We often bottle up these stresses and try and keep a lid on them, but when you do that, it can start to affect you negatively. That's where therapy comes in. It gives you a place to get these things off your chest, get down to root cause, and figure out how to work through what's weighing you down. Therapy is there to help develop positive coping skills. It's not just for people who have experienced major trauma. It's about empowering you to be the best version of yourself. So if you're thinking of starting therapy, why not look and give BetterHelp a try? It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. With over 1,000 therapists in the UK already, BetterHelp can provide access to mental health professionals with a wide variety of expertise in mental health. Our listeners can get 10% off their first month using the code betterhelp.com/wanderers. That's betterhelp.com/wanderers. Let's get back to the show.
I was looking, yeah, so Will, so got a little bit for the YouTube viewers. Will, can you be fit? I think you're right, exactly right, Tom. I think if he's involved in the squad, he's not going to be starting, because if he was ready for a midweek game, he would have been on the bench on Saturday. So it's tough. Do you think, Ed, do you think you'll be involved in the bench, or do you think we're still too early for Cunha? Because the club are keeping everything quite under wraps for this, apart from a few little YouTube and Instagram videos.
Yeah, so we had thoughts that he might even be fit for Coventry, didn't we? Which was like a week ago now. So they are definitely playing some kind of silly beggars in some way, shape or form. I just wonder why we bother, in all honesty. I'm not one of those people that's saying that the season's over. We are still pushing for Europe, potentially. There is still a chance that, you know, it can go all the way down to eighth, and who's to say that we aren't the eighth best team? I just don't know if it's worth risking him against Burnley in the midweek when he wasn't fit enough to even be on the bench yesterday. I'd rather give him another 4 or 5 days to get fit for the game after. Maybe on the bench, it's always might be nice to bring him on for 10 minutes and stretch his legs and test the hamstring out in a competitive match. But again, only if we're winning. I'm happy for him to take a place on the bench instead of one of the kids that didn't get a game yesterday, because why not? It's worth having him on the bench as a break in case of emergencies, but I don't know if we even need to worry, even if we're drawing against Burnley, to be honest, because we need to just keep picking up points and staying solid and get him back to full fitness. And yeah, I would prefer him to be fitter for the running rather than rushing through for a midweek game against a team that pretty much are relegated already.
Yeah, most definitely. And I think it is one of those things is how do we manage this squad and how do we get the best out of what we have at the moment without, as you say, potentially rushing people back, compounding injuries. Like we've seen with Neto this season, he's been out already with a hamstring injury, and he goes out and he's out again, all granted being the opposite leg. The problem is we seem to be having a lot in the same area. Is it something we should be potentially concerned about, Tom, in terms of what's going on with the medical staff, or is it sort of just one of these things that has just happened and it's sad that it's happened all at the same time?
Yeah, it's really tricky, isn't it? Because we're not medical men, we don't know. I mean, it sounds like he got absolutely all clear. There was nothing, this is Neto talking about, got the all clear, absolutely nothing on the scans. You take the advice that you know that you're given. I had this conversation with a mate of mine. I was watching the game with yesterday. I don't know if it's something to do, you know, we've got three strikers all out with hamstring injuries. Is it because we play this counter-attacking game where it's all sprinting, you know, so that they're just literally, I wouldn't say a low block, but, you know, they're pretty far back and then it's all guns blazing and they're sprinting like rapidly down the pitch consistently. Again, not a physio, don't really know, but whether there's something in that where it's just constant like sprinting rather than just like little jogs around, possibly. I don't know. I don't think Hwang, there's something really bizarre went on, wasn't there, with South Korea, I think, and what was going on there. I think he came back and he looked like a different person, just like an imposter in the before he got injured. There's something really bizarre was going on there. And to be fair, he's been injury prone, you know, pretty much since we've had him. Same with Neto. again since his kneecap injury. He's unfortunately been pretty injury prone. Kuna's just looked really soft when it happened. I didn't think anything of it. I thought he was going to come back on the pitch. It didn't even look like a proper hamstring injury, to be fair. And that's kept him out for, what, 5-6 weeks? But it's just so short-sighted, isn't it? In January, we all knew we were short. And we got so lucky earlier on in the season. And O'Neill was a victim of his own success, as it often is the case with a lot of these managers that we get. And yeah. Then when the shit hits the fan, they're just literally up shit creek. They got, you know, he called it, didn't he? He said, I'm a striker light. Two went out. We needed an attacker before, and then two went out. So what, we're three attackers down now, and then four of them are injured. It's just a joke, and it's probably going to cost them. You know what, we're going to lose about three or four places because of it. Or could have potentially maybe cost us a semi-final FA Cup. Might cost us three or four places in the league. Just because they didn't want to put the hand in the pocket and, you know, a couple of mil on a striker on loan. I'm not saying Brosh is the answer. I mean, Brosh has done nothing, has he, to be fair.
No.
But, there must have been someone who's better than an 18-year-old kid who's only been playing under-23s football just to cover us till the end of the season. It's just so, so frustrating. And we've seen it before. And it's just,
they don't
learn the lesson.
Looking at it, Ed, I mean, we've seen what happened with Nottingham Forest, with Everton, with their points deductions. Would you have taken a 4-point deduction to spend a couple of million on potentially a striker? And who do you think we could have bought in who could have made a difference?
I mean, I wouldn't have taken the point deduction. I think if we're in similar positions to where Forest are, I mean, their finances are nuts. I mean, they still bought people in January, didn't they? They bought about 14 goalkeepers, for goodness sake. It's crazy what they've managed to do, and they still try and get away with it. And Everton held their hands up, didn't they, and said that, you know, they were overspending their means and doing what they shouldn't have done. I wouldn't have taken a points deduction, but at the start of the season, I didn't see us being where we are now. So I imagine if you'd have asked me at the start of the season, I might have said yes, because I genuinely thought we were going to not just struggle. I genuinely was thinking we were going to be well in with the three promoted teams. That's how pessimistic I was at the start of the season. We were rumoured to be looking at what Che Adams, Brozier, the Brozier did is ridiculous though, isn't it? He's got to play a certain amount of games, or they've got to give basically a transfer fee and send him back anyway. So that's some weird West London money going on between Fulham and Chelsea there that we can't compete with in the West Midlands. So no, we really couldn't afford him either. I think it would have been definite points if we'd have taken someone as expensive as that loan deal. No, there must have been someone sniffing about that we could have gone for, but we obviously Fosun didn't want to. They want us to be this self-made team, don't they? And if we're going to have to do that, we're going to have to sell what, two players in the summer and hopefully reinvest in four or five players. Like Tom says, we are so light. We've got to flip it somehow.
There was obviously, I don't think it was a case of the breach of FFP, because there was that rumour going around that because of Johnny's, mutual termination of his contract, we had to pay him out. It cost us the money that we needed to get a striker in. But that Yuri Alberto deal was almost done, wasn't it? Until the agent, we tried to be, greedy and ask for extra cash. So there must have been money there that they thought they could spend to be within FFP. I think it's more along the lines of we're not just going to sign anyone, which I get, but you could find a loan for 6 months or something just to help you out, surely. I don't know. But yeah, it's just the fact we've done it all before. We've done it all before and we've not learned our lesson. And if it costs us three positions in the league, that's probably about £10 million anyway. So there's your self-sustainability bollocks covered.
Yeah, that's the tough one. I mean, you look at it and you go, okay, yeah, we don't want to bring just anyone in. We don't want to bring in someone who's going to be a bad egg or, bring discourse to the dressing room and upset people. But what damage can really be done in half a season? You know, he's not going to be there for, three, four-year contract. You bring in for somebody for 6 months and they help you. Is that not risk versus reward? Is that not something where we can potentially win a lot more and as you said, Tom, a few points in the league in a few places, you're talking several million. And that's a big boost going into next season. It just feels a lot like, from our point of view, and I was speaking for other fans and speaking on behalf of people, but it feels like the risk versus reward is always erring on the side of caution too much. Do we feel that's the case? Do we feel like, okay, maybe we should push that a little bit more? Or is that just me being a bit facetious?
It's the Diego Costa conundrum, isn't it? Do we get someone else like that in again? You know, we watched him get slightly fitter for the whole season last season, didn't we? And score a goal against Brentford when it was kind of whacked off him. But is he or someone of that ilk better than what we had the last couple of weeks? Probably, because he's a grown-up. Do you know what I mean? It's not that simple, but I don't know. I don't know. I'm not Stu. I don't know the ins and outs of FFP and how much money we do and don't declare. And I'm sure there's not just podcasts, but like I'd imagine if you check his ex timeline, he will explain it better than I can. But there must have been some money somewhere, like you said earlier. And I think Tom's spot on with the fact that could have cost us a semi-final, genuinely. Also, to use a Nuno line, did we have the solutions in the squad already? Did we need to send either one of those strikers that we sent away? Did we get much money for them? I don't know. I don't know the ins and outs of the finances, but I know Sasha's gone away and got injured again, but there's no guarantee that happens if he stays. Did we already have potentially, you know, Sasa Kalajic and Fabio Silva? Are they better options than what we have now? I'd imagine they are, but we let them go for whatever reason. And there must be some kind of financial balancing act that I don't understand, because it's obviously not the same as playing Football Manager, but, you know, that we can't be saving that much money by sending them both away.
Sasha won us 4 points this season.
Yeah.
You know, before January, you know, that's a big amount of points. And I know the Sasha one was more because he wanted to be the home with the missus and things like that. And you sort of get it. And Fabio, you know, needed to be playing football and all this sort of stuff. But I had this same annoyance when Adama went to Barca. When did we become a charity? Why are we looking out for? Why aren't we looking out for Wolverhampton Wanderers Football Club? Why are we looking after Adama? He wanted to go to his boyhood club. I don't even know if they covered his wages. We didn't get a loan fee, and it was an optional signing thing. I know it was Scott Sellers who hadn't got a clue, but there was that when he was playing for us. So we weakened ourselves there, and we weakened ourselves doubly in January to get Fabio playing football that he wanted to play. And so Sasha could go home and be closer to his family. Why aren't they looking after us? Was that us as in the club? It's the one thing that's really sort of grates on me a little bit, to be honest. And Hobbs has done a good job since he's been in, and it's not a slight on him. I just feel really sorry for O'Neill. I feel like he's just... What can you do? You get the vibe in the press conferences. You know, it's like, I've got 12 senior fit players. We'll try and come up with a plan that's going to work for us. But when you're playing, you know, some 18-year-old kid up front, it's hard to formulate a plan that's going to get you points against a rival who's chasing Champions League football away from home.
I totally agree with you. I think you have to feel sorry for what he's done, because he's achieved so much as in this season. It's unreal, really. When you look at where we've come and the coaching levels that he's achieved, is there a worry, Ed, that somebody could come in and take O'Neill in this summer? Because there will be teams sniffing around him, seeing the great job that he's done. And he's only ever done well for himself through Bournemouth and Wolves. So, you know, is there a problem where we could be seeing ourselves without a manager going into next season again?
Potentially. I think every time I come on here, I talk about the humble pie that I've eaten. Because Gary O'Neill did not inspire me at the start, and now I think he's brilliant. So there's always the potential of people sniffing around, but he kind of gives the vibe of someone who wants to build something. He wasn't happy with the way it ended at Bournemouth. I don't think he was ready to leave there either. And it's only in the last, 4 or 5 weeks, really, for Bournemouth, it's looked like it was the right decision, because they were awful at the start of the season. And since Christmas, they've kind of picked up, haven't they? That he's already sort of battered away the Man United rumours, and why anyone would go there with the ghost of Alex Ferguson still haunting the place. But we saw with our rock and roll manager last year, didn't we, that Lopetegui, when the chips were down, he wasn't ready to roll up his sleeves, but he was also saying that they weren't buying anybody. They weren't going to put their hands in their pockets. Mm. And, I mean, they haven't, really. So maybe there was an ounce of truth in what he was talking. So it's who comes in for him, I guess. It would need to be a step up from our team, and there aren't that many clubs higher than us right now. So why would he leave? Maybe England, maybe the England jobs might be the potential. But I don't see him leaving just yet, because I think he feels like he's got a point to prove as well.
Yeah, I think he's a high quality manager. I think he will go eventually to a bigger club. I could just see with the experience that he gets and with the coaching level that he's achieving with players, certain clubs will see levels within him and say, okay, well, he can achieve this with a club like Wolves and bring players through. He could do it at a big club, and I'm not saying people like Liverpool, but people, you know, clubs like that where they want to value bringing through youth players. Or even clubs like Brighton as well, with De Zerbi probably off as well in the summer. Clubs like that will be looking. And it's frustrating because we all want O'Neill to do well, and we all want him to achieve. And it is the Lopetegui situation again, as you say, where is he going to have the funds? Is he going to get frustrated with it all? Because there's only so much frustration you can take and deal with it without wanting to have an outburst or wanting to go somewhere else or do something different. You know, how do you feel on it, Tom? How do you feel about how we go into next season and how we approach transfers and how we keep essentially a manager that we didn't want at the start of the season as fans? How do we keep him happy?
I'm with Ed as well. I get decent vibes from him. I think hopefully, you know, he will feel a bit of sense of loyalty. I know loyalty is very, very limited in football, but, you know, we gave him a big opportunity. You know, it's a step up from Bournemouth, isn't it? You know, so he got a gig at a good club. I think there will be movement in the summer in regard to transfers. I still think we'll have funds to get people in, you know, regardless of sales. I'm not saying a big amount of money, but the line they've always towed is that if we get through this like little cycle, this is where, you know, we find out if they've been lying to us or not. The line was in the summer. You know, Jeff Shee, when he gave that sort of statement, and he was at the start of the season when he was talking about, you know, Lopetegui in it and things like that, he did say, look, we need to get through this 12 months basically, and then we can go again to a certain extent in the summer. So I still think there will be funds. I'm hoping and praying that we manage to keep hold of Aitnori and Gomez and we don't lose. I still think Neto will probably go, which hopefully will allow, you know, a lot more freedom of movement in the transfer market and give us some funds to spend, which will hopefully satisfy O'Neill enough to keep his interest. I'm just really hoping that we don't lose, you know, another star. And then, you know, there is sort of, you know, trimming the fact that we can do and hopefully get a bit of money for some of the lesser lights like Guedes, you know, Fabio, players like that, you know, Pedenza. It's going to bring up too much money, but hopefully there should be enough there to keep O'Neill's interest is basically what I'm saying. I think there should be some movement there.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. I think there is enough within the players who are on loan, and I think there's going to be a value in there to help the squad. Bringing it back to Burnley, I know they're going to do a preview show, I think Monday night, going out on YouTube. I'll ask you what you guys think. What do you think the score is going to be? Go to you first, Tom. What do you think? What's your thinking? I know we're still on a bit of a downer after yesterday, but yeah. How are you feeling?
I'll remain on the optimistic side and go 1-0, Wolves.
You, Ed?
Yeah, I was going to say 1-0, Wolves. If Doc's up front, 2-0.
2-0 Burnley. Good.
Danny Butterfield hat trick. I'm going for. But no, I'd say we haven't got much more to talk about. We've got a good chat about the game. We've talked about everything. I'll end it with a bit of a light note. So, with it being Easter Sunday, more famous for chocolate than Jesus apparently anymore, but it's what it is. What's our favourite Easter egg? What are we saying, boys? What's your favourite go-to? You know, you're really happy if you get this that chocolate bar. What do you reckon, Ed?
Question.
So my favourite small egg is the peanut butter Reese's things filled with peanut butter. They're incredible. Enough to put you into a diabetic coma. It's as sweet as anything. Good old Cadbury's for me. I know it's technically a Birmingham company, but they are the best chocolate. So, we're talking Whisper, we're talking Dairy Milk. Any plain Cadbury's chocolate is all good for me. Although I am spotting, is that Mintero behind you, Jippo?
That ain't mine. That's the other one.
I'm partial to mint flavoured stuff too, so I wouldn't say no to that either.
You, Tom, what do you think?
Big fan of the mini egg. So, yeah, because the mini egg eggs, you get obviously the egg, which is obviously great, and then you get the mini eggs inside it, which is just a delightful bonus. I'd go mini eggs. I'm not going to say
it's a delightful bonus. It is
absolutely eggs inside eggs. What more could you want?
It's exception.
Indeed. Absolutely.
That's an exceptional way to end this show.
Yeah.
I'm gonna leave it at that. That was fantastic.
Yeah, that'll do.
So, yeah. So thanks for everyone for listening. Thanks for our sponsors, Audi and Boston Coffee Company. Appreciate you guys coming on and having a chat with us today. Everyone who's been involved with the YouTube comments, everyone who's watched live on Twitter, X, Facebook, and everyone who listens on, you know, all your best places to get your podcasts. So, good night from Tom.
Night, guys.
Night from Ed.
See you guys.
I'll catch you soon. That was a fantastic 45 minutes. Cheers, guys. Thanks for listening. Peace.